Parshas Beshalach. The end of last week's Parsha, Yetzias Mitzrayim, occurs. And we're going to talk about what happens thereafter. And we're going to get up to the incident of Shvi Shel Pesach, of the seventh day of Pesach, when the splitting of the Yam Suf occurred. So the Medrash says, hundreds of thousands of Mitzrim had died, and Paro said to Moshe, go out there and pray for me, and now he has a radical change of heart. He had tried to toss them out, he tried to cajole them into going, and it says he even gave them somewhat of a entourage to walk them out. And it says, as a reward for this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that the third generation of the Egyptians are allowed to freely marry, they're allowed to marry, to become gerim and marry Jews. All of a sudden, it says, it dawned on Paro. What did he lose? Oh my gosh, he said. This was a valuable asset. They bring a metaphor. There was a person who had an orchard, and he was going to sell it. A buyer came along and offered him a good price for the property, and the deal was included, and the deal was done. And let us say he sold the property for $500,000. People asked him, how did you do? What did you sell that for? And he said, $500,000. And they said, you dick. The thing was worth at least $1.5 million. Didn't you appreciate the fact that you had the greatest olive harvest in the area? He said, you had the best vines. Your fruit trees were second to none. He said, do you know that if a conglomerate had come in here and tried to buy this, you would have tripled the amount you got? And when he heard that, obviously he was demoralized. He says, that's the reaction of Paro. He wanted to save his life because he was a Bechor, and he sent the Jews out. But then he realized amongst them were very, not only were there the menial slaves, there were wise men. There were people who did the types of jobs that Egyptians were not capable of. In other words, they had the intellectual skills. And when he considered the workforce that he had left, he was demoralized. And then, don't forget, it says the Jews despoiled Mitzrayim. They took all their wealth. They took their gold, silver, etc. And the Erevrav, certain of the better Egyptians, left as well. Paro had a real significant economic loss. Bnei Yisroel were being led by Moshe and Aaron. The women were being led by Miriam Hanaviah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're told, does not take a direct route to Eretz Yisroel. It says HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want them to go into the land of the Plishtim. And there were a number of reasons why. It seems, and I was reading this yesterday, I think, in Rav Silverstein's Sefer, okay? The Plishtim would have been allowed to exercise their free will and possibly attack the Jews. And there might have been a war which would have led to the suffering of casualties of the weaker ones. Rabbi Zilberstein explains that the reason this could have happened, he says, we always ask the question, why doesn't God just knock out Hamas today? With all that they've done, that's so terrible. He says, if you want to try to understand a bit of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's cheshbin, you've got to have two things happen. One, the Pelishtim then, Hamas today, have got to be in a situation where they have totally exhausted any mitzvah, any positive action, any reward thereof. And he says, unfortunately, their cupboard's not empty. And on the other hand, Rabbi Lou Zilberstein says, the Jewish people have got to have reached the stage where they're significantly tzaddikim to warrant that type of miracle. So Hashem, in his judgment, said, I've got to allow, if the Jews go through, there's going to be a war. It has to happen. And that'll demoralize them. So let's take them on a route that there won't be war. The other thing is, it says, that Avimelech and Avraham, way back when, made a pact. Avimelech was the king of the Pelishtim, and they weren't going to harm each other for three generations. And it says, the third generation of Avimelech's children were still alive. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not allow this treaty to be violated. And then there's another medrash that tells us that a large number of families from the family of Ephraim somehow had left Egypt 30 years earlier, miscalculating the time of the actual Gula. They claimed that the 400 years would have begun at the time of the actual Bris Ben Absorim that Avraham made with Hashem. But really, we're told, the 400 years start 30 years thereafter with the birth of Yitzhak Avinu. Somehow they escaped Mitzrayim, but when they were in the land of Pelishtim, it says they were attacked, and it says 300,000 people from Ephraim were killed. The Pelishtim left remnants of the deceased, bones, human fragments of bones all over the place. And this was to dissuade any Jewish attempt to come at them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I do not want this uplifted nation who have been inspired by the Geula, by the redemption, to have to see this and again be demoralized. Rabbi, I, this must be a medrash. It says again, why didn't Hashem offer the protection from the Pelishtim? He swore to Yosef. Oh, okay, here's what it says. They had promised all of the remaining family of Yaakov Avinu had agreed to take the Atzmos Yosef with them, the bones of Yosef HaTzadik out of Mitzrayim, when the Gula would occur. We're told that the Pasuk tells us that the only one who wasn't involved in scooping up rituals with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu went to Serach Bas Asher, who was still alive, and said, I've been trying to figure out where, in fact, the Arayim of Yosef HaTzadik is. And she said, I remember where they cast it into the Nile with heavily laden materials so it would never surface. And I think it says that Yosef, rather Moshe Rabbeinu, came to the river and he said, Ale Shoyer. The Shoyer, the ox, the beast of burden, who carries, right? And as a metaphor for carrying the Jews, said, please, Yosef HaTzadik, you've asked us to take you. If you surface, fine, and if not. And it says, this heavy, either lead or metallic Arayim, lifted miraculously up, and Moshe took it. But the entire nation had this responsibility. And it may have been the question, they're asking the question, where was Yehoshua? And there's not a clear answer to that here. But it does say that when the Jews, when the B'nai Ephraim were leaving Egypt, Yehoshua said, my Rebbe, well, I don't know how he would know, because Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't there. So, but anyway, he didn't go. He didn't think it was appropriate. We're told, we want to take a look at the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu treated the people who left Mitzrayim. It says, in a normal situation, a king who captures captives and is going to free them makes them basically show their gratitude. But what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He gave them every kind of conceivable service. He gave them seven clouds of glory, four of which surrounded the camp north, south, east, west, and gave shelter. A cloud above was a roof-like protection from the sun, and one below to smooth the way and kill any poisonous snakes, scorpions along the way. And the seventh cloud was the one that went in front of the camp to lead it. And we're told by day it was a right cloud, but at night it was a pillar of fire leading them on, showing them where to go. We also know that in the desert, Klal Yisroel never grew anything. They didn't have to, when they encamped, they didn't plant. They didn't try to turn the desert green. That was left for our generation. And they often, or maybe most of the time, were in arid situations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu went and gave Klal Yisroel the man to eat, and other times we know they had the quails, and they had the Be'er Shel Miriam, the well, the rock of Miriam, which we're told actually, when they camped, would make rivers and tributaries. It says that in some places, they actually constructed rowboats to go across the water that came from Miriam's well. Unculus, a tzaddik, was a nephew of the Roman Emperor Hadrian. And he left his, right, the court of the emperor, and he went and became a ger and a tzaddik. The emperor sent troops to bring him back. When the soldiers arrived, Uncalus went into a conversation with them, and whatever he said to them, he all of a sudden had a Roman-based medrash. They weren't going back. They were becoming Yidden. So when this happened, the emperor took a second bunch of soldiers, and he says, do not get involved in any conversations. Capture him and bring him to me. But he was on the way because they made him go, and he said, hold on, he said, let me ask you guys something along the way. You might be interested. He said, we're traveling. He said, if a group of people who are of noble rank, that are you, travel together, he say, do you think a baron would hold a lantern for you? Would a duke eliminate the way? How would it happen? Oh, you're telling me that the soldiers would have to make sure there was light for the general. They would have to make sure that whatever the dignitary was sent had it comfortable. He says, I want to tell you what happened when the Jews left Mitzrayim. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the Con Ed. He lit everything for them. He fed them. He clothed them. Their clothes never needed to be adjusted. Their clothes never got dirty. And he said, is that the way of a basar v'dam? Is that the way of a normal king of flesh and blood? And it says, these soldiers too said, uh-huh. And they went back to become Geirim. And that's the end of the story. The emperor realized he could not overcome Uncalus. The Parsha tells us that the Jewish people arrived at a spot called Sukkos on the outskirts of the desert and continued from there into the desert. They did a 3-day journey into the desert, and now Hashem gives Moshe a difficult command. He says, I want you to tell the Jewish people I want them now to retreat and go back towards Egypt. I want to mislead Paro into thinking that the Jews were lost because they went so far away and now they're coming back. I want the Egyptians to pursue the Jewish people so they can get their full measure of punishment when I drown them in the Yam Suf. That is the midah kineged midah. That's the appropriate retribution for the fact that they killed Jewish children. They threw them into the river. This was a terrible test for Klal Yisrael. Can you imagine people who had done a 3-day journey to freedom having to go back and being told you're going to face your enemy again? It said, the ones who were of lesser faith became despaired. And Moshe said to them, I assure you, you are never going to be enslaved again by Mitzrayim. The freedom that you obtained when you left is a permanent gift by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Jewish people. And it says that a group of people said, we gave allegiance to Moshe Rabbeinu, meaning we gave allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't matter how we feel, how our families will feel to retreat. We understand that if this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command, that's what is to be done. It says, on the whole, this was called a generation of Amunah. The majority, the vast, vast majority of the Jewish people in the desert had Amunah, faith in Hashem, and would do anything that Moshe Rabbeinu asked, no matter how it appeared to them at the beginning. We're told that they started turning around and they went to a place called Pisom, which is renamed Pihachiros, the mouth of freedom, because that's where the Jews were totally freed from ever having to serve Mitzrayim by virtue of the drowning, right? And they were now in the vicinity of an idol called Baal Tzephon. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he killed the firstborns, had destroyed every single deity, every single idol in Mitzrayim, and the only idol left in their entire religion was this one idol, Baal Tzephon. Paro, who had been told all along the Jews were going for a 3-day journey into the desert, had sent emissaries, dignitaries, to make sure that these people did in fact come home, come back. And they said, the Jewish people, when told 3 days are up, they said to the dignitaries, we're not going back ever. We were promised by God complete freedom. And these emissaries would go back as quickly as they could to tell Paro about what happened. And maybe they were given assistance by God to get their ASAP, or did they have a flag system? I don't know. But Paro knew, and Paro said, aha, my idol, Baal Tzephon, my trusted last idol, it stood. In other words, this whole exercise was so that I should know who the real God is, Baal Tzephon. And my deity has now overcome this God of the Jews. And he said to his advisors, his generals, it is illogical that the Jews stopped in Pisom. This is a dangerous spot. It must be that the idols stopped them, and they can neither travel forward, because it says here the ocean blocks their way, but I don't think they were at the ocean, unless they were going down the Mediterranean somehow. And they can't go to the desert. In other words, they realize the desert is much too difficult to go across. And he says, maybe our God, Baal Tzephon, has gathered together legions of wild animals to stand at a certain spot in the desert And the Jews saw this, and in fear of this, they came back. And it says, in fact, this did happen. Paro saw a vision of the Sar Shel Esav, the guardian angel, coming to his assistance to take on the Jewish people. And this also enhanced his belief that the Jewish people were now going to be once again captured by him. And in so doing, he harnesses an army to take them on. And we'll continue with the Midrashim tomorrow. Thank you for your time. Have a lovely day.